The law of social validation. Social validation is all around us. For example, when something strange happens on an airline flight, most look to the flight attendant to see if they should panic. If there's a strange noise, we look at their reaction. If they stay calm, we tend to stay calm. I was on a flight that hit an air pocket and the plane dropped a few hundred feet. As this airplane dropped, the flight attendant screamed, turned white, and hurried to sit in her seat and buckled up. Now, what do you think happened to the other passengers? After this behavior from the flight attendant, it caused the other passengers to tense up and scream. Her behavior caused a social panic. We are social animals. Look at the explosion of social media. We all have an innate desire to belong to a social group. Many judge their value by the number of Facebook friends. It is precisely because we value this sense of belonging so highly that the more other people find an idea, trend, or product appealing or correct, the more correct that position becomes in our minds. The law of social validation recognizes and builds on our innate desire to be part of the group or part of the majority. It also recognizes that we tend to change our perceptions, opinions, and behaviors in ways that are consistent with group norms. Even if we don't admit it, or maybe even realize it, we care about what others think. As such, we use others' behavior to guide in establishing the standard for the products we use, services we trust, and decisions we make. We seek to find out what others are doing in a way of validating our own actions. This method is how we decide what constitutes correct or standard behavior. We see the behavior as more correct when we see others doing it. The more people do it, the more correct it becomes. Professor Kirk Hansen at the Stanford Business School demonstrated this when he boosted downloads for best-selling files on the web by personally downloading those files over and over so the counter was artificially high. He and his team then observed that those boosted downloaded files were downloaded even more frequently. High number on the counter indicated popularity, and people were most interested in downloading the files that were already ranked the highest. Whether the question is how to react at a sporting event, how we act at a party, or whether we should order dessert at a restaurant, the validation of others gives us answers and therefore guides our actions. We all seek validation. We learned early in life that we make fewer mistakes when we follow the social norm. When we are not sure what to do, we seek the social norm by observing what others do. If we don't know the standard, we look around to find it. The law of social validation becomes a way to save time and energy in figuring out what is correct. We use others' behavior to guide our own actions, to validate what we should or should not do. We don't always have to look at the positive and negative in every situation. This automatic trigger saves us from thinking. We compare what we do against the standard of what everyone else is doing. If we find a discrepancy between what we observe and what we do, we tend to make changes in the direction of the social norm. Social validation compels us to change our behaviors, our attitudes, and our actions, even when what we observe doesn't really match our true desire or thoughts. We seek out social norms to help us know what we should be feeling, watching, buying, or doing. For the most part, this is not a conscious process. We subconsciously accept many ways of behaving that are determined by our surroundings and the actions of others, such as raising our hands to speak in class, how we behave at a concert, or how we act at work because of the corporate culture. When we become part of the group, our once divulgent emotions and feelings tend to converge. Usually, as long as most people agree with what we are doing or about to do, we feel social validation. For the most part, we are conformists. We will do what the crowd does. We don't like to admit that, but it's true. The bottom line is that people usually believe the majority or believe what society says they're supposed to believe. Only 5 to 10% of the population engages in behavior contrary to the social norm. When we find ourselves in a foreign situation where we feel awkward or unsure of how to act, we look for those social cues that will dictate our behavior. This could be a party, during an orientation, while attending a family reunion, or one's first day on the job at a new company. When the social information we are seeking is vague, we don't know how to respond and thus continue seeking out social clues. We see this law operating in groups and organizations, on the web, on an infomercial, and in day-to-day public life. In all of these circumstances, there's a certain standard or norm. In organization, the years of tradition establish a standard operating procedure. Because we want to fit into these groups and maintain our membership with them, we conform our actions to the norm. The law of social validation is always happening, everywhere. Publicly passing the donation plate to help with a community project, doing the wave at sporting events, going to popular dance clubs when you don't enjoy the surroundings, being afraid to raise your hand in class to ask a question, stacking the top 10 most popular books right in the entryway of a bookstore, choosing restaurants according to which have the longest lines or the most cars, choosing movies according to which ones everyone's talking about, washing our hands in public restrooms only when someone else is watching, and restaurants seating their first patrons near the window for everyone else to see. If we are unsure where to eat or what movie to see, what do? We check our phones for the restaurants with the best reviews or the movies with the best feedback. Sometimes theaters even employ professional audience members to start laughter, clapping, or even standing ovations. When a theater hires someone to applaud performances, they're called claques. In fact, it was a professional group that would applaud in French opera houses. When audience members see others stand and cheer or applaud, they're more inclined to do so. Performers commonly salt the tip jar by placing some money in the jar themselves. When people see that others have already made contributions, they assume this is the appropriate and acceptable thing to do. Salting the tip jar is a common practice among pianists, bartenders, bus drivers, and even homeless on the street. Even in churches, the practice of salting the collection plate is often employed. People are more inclined to donate if they are passed a plate that already holds some bills. I once attended a college football game between two fierce crosstown rivals. Emotions were high. We all wanted our home team to win. One of the fans near me was using a megaphone to taunt the other team and its fans. He only meant it in good fun, but it was not too long before a rent-a-cop came up to the man and told him he could not use the megaphone during the game. The rent-a-cop stood in the middle of the aisle of a sold-out game. The fan said he was just having fun, but the rent-a-cop stressed that it was strictly against the rules. Then the social pressure and validation kicked in. Other fans nearby told the rent-a-cop that the fan's overzealous actions were okay and that there was no problem. The rent-a-cop tried to persist, but the crowd only grew louder in their protests. Finally, the rent-a-cop decided it wasn't worth the hassle and left. Even watching someone else do what's right will give your cause social validation. For example, one study asked 10,000 high school students to give blood. The study found that students who had been exposed to 38 photos of high school blood drive scenes were 17% more likely to donate blood than the students who had not seen the photos. Seeing others do the right thing prompts us to socially validate the cause and jump on board. Even at a retail store or swap meet, the more people that are in your store, the easier it is for others to come in. So what is the power of the group? In a study, participants were asked to identify the longer of two lines displayed on a screen. One line was clearly longer than the other, but some participants had been privately instructed prior to the study to state that the shorter line was longer. The surprising result was that several of the unsuspecting participants actually gave in to social pressure and changed their answer. Over the course of the entire study, 75% of the participants gave the incorrect answer at least one time. In a related study, it was determined that even when the correct answer is obvious, individuals will knowingly give the incorrect answer 37% of the time just to go along with the consensus. You know how you've often heard canned laughter on television sitcoms, even when there isn't anything really funny happening? Studies prove that using canned laughter actually influences audiences' members to laugh longer and more frequently, and to give the material higher ratings for its funniness. Even for the portions of the show that seem to have no humor at all, producers use laugh tracks to get us to laugh along. The sad part is that it actually works. There is evidence that canned laughter is most effective when the joke is really bad. When two audiences watch the same show and one hears a laugh track, it's always the audience that hears a laugh track that laughs the most. Another study was set up to test whether passerbys would stare up into the air if there was another group of people already doing so. The researchers arranged groups of 1 to 15 people to congregate in New York City at 33rd West and 42nd Street. A camera was set up on the 6th floor to catch the results. Sure enough, the more people in the group who were already gawking and looking into the air, the more people who stopped, came over, stared, and looked up themselves. When participants were asked to view a political debate, it was found that the mere presence of a Confederate who cheered for one of the candidates influenced the participants' overall evaluation of that candidate in a positive manner. Obviously, when receiving information in a social setting, the audience can be skewed to perceive the information the way the group tends to hear it. You know the signs on the bed at hotels? These signs say something like, "Help save the environment," or "Let's go green." They tell us to respect nature by reusing our towels and bedsheets. Study was done using two different slogans. The first slogan was help save the environment, and the second slogan added a little social validation. It said, join your fellow guests in helping save the environment. This little change in wording added the social validation, boosted the amount of tower use almost 10%. What's the other side of social validation? It's called bystander apathy. Numerous studies demonstrate that when someone is in trouble or in need of help, as the number of bystanders increases, the number of people who actually help decreases. It's termed bystander apathy. This effect occurs because in almost any situation, the more people that are present, the more we feel a diffusion of responsibility. Our sense of social pressure is lessened when we feel that there might be any number of people more capable of helping than we are. Sometimes we go against our better judgment because we want to be liked, accepted, and found in agreement with the social norms. When we are part of the crowd, we no longer feel individually responsible for our emotions or actions. We can allow ourselves to shout, sing, cry, or strike without temperament imposed by personal accountability. Have you ever been in a situation where, because of the numbers of your group, you really didn't give it your all? Maybe on an academic group project, you weren't as diligent as you would have been had you been solely responsible for the assignment. Or maybe you helped push a stalled car into safety with some other people but didn't really push your hardest. When we find ourselves in groups, there is a diffusion of responsibility. Sometimes we don't know whether we should even involve ourselves in the first place, since there are so many other people who could take action. Have you ever seen someone pulled over on the side of the road, but you just kept driving along with all the other cars speeding by? When there are large numbers of people involved, we tend to assume someone else will respond and take action first, or we might conclude that our help is not really needed. One particular case in history stands out as a classic example of bystander apathy. Catherine Genovese, a young woman living in New York City, was murdered one night when returning home from work. The unfortunate truth of the matter was that in a city like New York, her death was just another countless murder. Consequently, the incident didn't receive any more coverage than a few short lines in the New York Times. Genovese's story would have remained an obscure and incidental case had it not been for the publicity given one additional fact of her killing. See, a week later, A.M. Rosenthal, editor of the New York Times, went out to lunch with the city police commissioner. Rosenthal asked the commissioner about another homicide in the area, but the commissioner, mistakenly thinking he was being asked about the Genovese case, revealed a shocking piece of information that had been uncovered by the police. Genovese's death had not been a silent, hidden, or secretive occurrence. Rather, it had been a loud, drawn-out public event. As her attacker chased her down and stabbed her three separate times in a 35-minute period, 38 neighbors watched from their apartment windows and didn't even call the police. Rosenthal promptly assigned a team to investigate this incident of bystander apathy. Soon after, the New York Times came out with a lengthy front-page article detailing the incident with the alleged reactions of the neighbors. For more than a half hour, 38 respectable law-abiding citizens in Queens watched a killer stalk and stab a woman in three separate attacks in Kew Gardens. Twice the sound of her voice and the sudden glow of the bedroom lights interrupted him and frightened him off. Each time he returned, sought her out, and stabbed her again. Not one person telephoned the police during the assault. One witness called after the woman was dead. Everyone was completely stunned and baffled. How could people just witness such a scene and do absolutely nothing? Even the very neighbors alluded to in the article didn't know how to explain their inaction. Responses included, I don't know, I was afraid, didn't want to get involved. These explanations didn't really answer anything. Why couldn't one of them have made a quick, anonymous call to the police? Different branches of the media, newspapers, TV stations, magazines, radio stations, pursued their own studies and investigations to explain the incredible scenario. All of them finally arriving at the same conclusion. The witnesses simply didn't care. They concluded that there was no other explanation, or so they thought. Do you really think 38 people did not care enough to make an anonymous phone call? Did the researchers not understand the diffusion of responsibility? The neighbors did not react thinking someone else would help or someone else would call the police. Most of us are good people. If each individual neighbor knew it was up to them to phone the police to get help, I guarantee they would have made the call. Bystander apathy happens when an individual's chances of helping decreases when unreceptive bystanders are present in emergency situations. Another experiment conducted in New York highlighted this tendency for bystander apathy. They had participants complete a questionnaire. After a few minutes, smoke began to enter the room underneath the door. The study found that when a lone individual observed the smoke leaking from under a door, 75% of those studied reported the smoke. In groups of three, however, the reporting instances dropped to 38%. If in that group two of the people encouraged a third person to do nothing, reporting the smoke dropped to 10%. Sometimes the smoke got so thick it was hard to read the questionnaire. Then there's de-individuation. De-individuation refers to how, when we find ourselves in a group, we become less self-aware and less concerned with how others will evaluate us. The group becomes a focus as less attention and awareness is on the individuals. Think of all the people you've heard yell obscenities at sporting events. Do you think they would do that if they were in a small, intimate group watching the same event? Basically, de-individuation means that when in a group, we feel more anonymous and therefore less individually responsible for our actions, often causing us to say or to do things that we would not normally feel comfortable with. One study showed how de-individuation can lead to antisocial behavior. So on Halloween, researchers evaluated over 1,000 trick-or-treaters, either alone or in groups. These trick-or-treaters had the chance to steal candy from 27 Seattle homes. The researchers figured that Halloween would be the perfect occasion to conduct such a study because the children would be in costume, making them more anonymous. When the children came to the doors, where they were greeted by experimenters, they were told they could choose only one piece of candy. In some cases, the experimenter asked the children their names, while in other cases, the children were allowed to remain anonymous. The experimenter would leave the room as though they had to go get something. Unseen observers took careful note of how the children responded. When alone, 7.5% took more than one piece of candy. When in groups, 20.8% took more than one piece. It was also interesting to observe that the children who remained anonymous stole more candy than did the children who gave out their names. De-individuation prompted many of the trick-or-treaters to go against what was socially acceptable and steal more candy. Anytime we find ourselves part of a group, we feel some susceptibility to peer pressure and or the opinions of others in that group. The more connected, similar, or respect we feel for the group, the more their opinions matter to us, and therefore the more we feel pressure to align our own opinions with those of the group. Even when we don't really agree with the group, we will often go along with the group in order to be mentally rewarded instead of punished, or liked instead of scorned. This happens when it is part of the corporate culture, the norm, fear of rejection, or just assuming everyone else is correct. Then there's social validation and marketing. The more a brand is advertised, the more popular and familiar it is perceived to be. We as consumers somehow infer that something is popular simply because it is advertised. When people are buying gifts for others, social proof is one of the most effective techniques that a sales clerk can use. That's why referrals are some of your best prospects. Referrals are your greatest source of social validation. Many salespeople find great success in telling clients that a particular product is their best-selling or most popular on hand because social validation increases their credibility of the product. When customers feel that something is more popular, they spend more money to acquire it, even if there's no proof other than a salesperson's word. So it is with advertising. Asserting that a product is in super high demand or that it is the most popular or fastest selling seem to provide proof enough. When consumers perceive a product as popular, that's often all they need to go out and purchase it. The creation and use of social validation is rampant. Clubs make their spots look like the place to be by allowing huge waiting lines to congregate outside the facilities, even when the place is practically empty inside. Salespeople often recount the many other people who have purchased the item in question. Sales and motivation consultant Cabot Roberts said it best, "Since 95% of the people are imitators and only 5% initiators, people are persuaded more by the actions of others than by any proof we can offer." So how do we make this work? The power of social validation can be used to your benefit in any persuasive situation. When your product or service is socially validated, people are most likely to use it or switch to it. People are always looking around and comparing themselves to see if they line up with everyone else. If they feel a discrepancy between where they are and where everyone else is, they will most likely conform to the group standard. So how do you increase your social validation? Is your product or service best-selling, number one, top 10, fastest growing, most popular, newest trend, or standard issue. Also, consider the following ways you can enhance the effects of social validation to your benefit. Realize the larger the group, the better. The larger the group, the more people will conform. Social theory shows us that when a group grows, so does the conformity to that group. Also, realize the greater the familiarity, the better. The more a person can identify with the group, the more that person can be influenced to change their behavior and their opinions. Social validation is more powerful when we observe people we consider to be just like us. People prefer the validation or experiences of ordinary people when they are considering purchases or buying decisions. Another one is the clearer the principle of social validation, the better. Find the best use of social validation. Is it the best selling, the most popular, used by elite, the fastest growing? Is it part of a trend, or is it the industry standard? Who else uses it? Do you have testimonials from other clients or users? Remember, you could be the smartest person in your field or even the most qualified, but if that is not the perception, there is no credibility. You can transfer or borrow credibility from others. Make sure you associate yourself or your product with people or companies that your prospect would respect, emulate, or admire. The research shows that customer testimonials will always positively affect the persuasiveness of advertising. Are you credible in the eyes of your prospect? You have to be careful in how you explain and exhibit your credibility. If you launch into a laundry list of all your accomplishments or of your education and titles, you might be perceived as self-centered. Take advantage of less direct or self-proclaimed ways to show your audience how competent you are. For example, you can hang your degrees on the wall, have someone else give you a brief bio, or have someone else offer his recommendation of you. You can borrow credibility from others using a testimonial or statement from them. So if you're really looking to increase your credibility, part of that's being prepared, your appearance, getting a referral, getting an introduction, using proper facts, figures, or statistics, having the right external surroundings, using testimonials, and even finding someone else to reveal your qualifications. Social validation will not work if there's no credibility or your statement is not believable. When you use a testimonial that feels too good to be true, then this technique will backfire. How about a case study? I was consulting a client and helping her make her web pages more persuasive. Everything was in order. It was a great offer and the site had the right look. She used the right colors and it provided a great solution to what people were looking for. It just was not pulling like she wanted. There was great traffic, the look was professional, but not enough sales. Using the law of social validation, what would you recommend? I told her no one will believe her personal story as much as other people's personal stories. She had something to gain. It was her product, her website, and her profit. A neutral party would increase her credibility in social validation. We increased the number of testimonials she had on the website, and it doubled her sales. Social validation is borrowing credibility and trust from other people. The bottom line is that people always believe others before they believe you. You have something to gain. Last note, when you increase your trust level, you can reduce the amount of social validation you need to use. If you want to know how to implement the 5 C's of trust, get the free report at MaximumInfluence.com.